from Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Just more borrowing in and of itself without a plan for repayment would be a huge mistake. We in Illinois have been borrowing, not paying pensions, borrowing, skyrocketing debt for years. We've got to change our system.
The fact of the matter is the state of Illinois has been borrowing against the will of the vendors over the last 2 years, and it's time that we stop being deadbeats and get to work on paying them back.
What do we have to do? We remain in a political and fiscal crisis because of the inaction of a reticent governor who continually remains silent, primarily through his abrogation of duty on the budget.
The first and only direct conversation which I've had with President Trump was the day of his inauguration, and I thanked him for the kind words he said about Dreamers and DACA. He looked me in the eye and he said, "Don't worry about those kids. We're going to take care of those Dreamers." Well, today this announcement that was handed down tells us that the clock is ticking.
I do not believe this challenge for these children can be addressed on a state-by-state basis. I think that would not be correct. It would not be the right solution. We need a comprehensive immigration reform. It should be done at the federal level for the entire nation and should be done by Congress.
Well, there is fallout here in Illinois and across the country over the Trump administration's DACA decision. Also, the governor agreeing to borrow money to pay down bills, and when is a running mate no longer a running mate? We'll talk about that and more on State Week. Here in Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. I'm joined in studio by Charlie Wheeler. Charlie runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And in our Statehouse studio today, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio Statehouse reporter, and Matt Dietrich, our guest. He is a writer for PolitiFact Illinois at the Better Government Association. And Matt, good to have you on once again.
Thank you, Sean.
So I mentioned the fact that the state borrowing money, that's usually not necessarily a great thing to hear about, but a lot of people wanted to see this happen, the governor finally agreeing to it. Brian, what's this all about and how did this come to be?
Well, during the budget impasse, Illinois built up a $15 billion backlog of bills. And it had this even before the budget impasse in a much smaller way. But this is basically the state was issuing contracts for services, things like food for the prisoners, gasoline for our state police cars, as well as people who take care of people with disabilities or people who are can't leave their homes for whatever reasons. You know, these are things that the state contracts to do, but we didn't have the money in a lot of cases to pay these vendors. So we just kept adding to this huge pile of IOUs, which grew to be about $15 billion. Just to put that in context, that's somewhere between half and a third, maybe 35-40% of our annual general revenue expenditures every year. I think the budget this past year was around in the area of $37 billion. So that's just a huge pile of money we owe to Illinois, in a lot of cases, Illinois-based businesses. So fast forward to the budget agreement that comes through a couple months ago over the summer. It included an element to borrow money to begin paying some of this more quickly, both to get relief to some of these vendors, but also to lower the interest rates. Something I didn't mention is some of these vendors get as much as 12% interest penalties per year. So the state is paying, I've seen one estimate, $800 million a year in interest penalties on this backlog. So the idea is pay off those high interest ones more quickly at, you know, the rate that the state could borrow money, which is from the market, which is probably going to be closer to 4 or 5%.
And Charlie, is this a smart move to do this?
Oh, I think it is. And to be honest, I couldn't figure out why the governor didn't want to do it sooner. The quote we heard from him at the beginning, talking about too much borrowing, well, I think Comptroller Mendoza nailed it on the head. We are borrowing, but the people we're borrowing from are folks who aren't in the business of lending money. It's the providers, it's school districts, it's everybody to whom the state owes money that can't be paid because we just don't have the cash. And as was noted, on some of this debt, we're paying 12% interest, 1% a month on these past due payments. No matter what you may think of the state's credit worthiness, and the state has got the lowest credit rating of any state in the union, you'll still be able to sell bonds at a lot less than 12%. So as I say, to me, it was a no-brainer. Why not borrow the money from people who are in the business of doing lending rather than imposing it upon small businesses, school districts, human service providers, folks who are desperate for the money, some of them going out of business because they don't have it.
And Matt, it seems as though this is the type of thing that I think it falls under the radar for a lot of folks, but this is really a drain on the Illinois economy when you have these businesses not getting paid for all of this work, and you're seeing this amount of, what, $15 billion. That doesn't help the economy of the state.
No, it's money that has come out of the state already, and people are just waiting to be paid and waiting and waiting and waiting. So you're exactly right, Sean. It is a big hole that's carved out of the Illinois economy.
So, Charlie, you mentioned they can get a better interest rate. Talk about why that 12% exists in the beginning. I mean, that's a high rate, and that was sort of self-imposed, correct?
Oh, yeah. That was a law that was passed a few years ago, I guess several years ago now. And the idea was to put a hammer over the head of the state so that these vouchers would be processed more quickly and folks would be paid what they were owed more quickly. It was not seen as going to be part of everyday business where we're paying, the comptroller says, $2 million a day in these interest fees. Rather, it was sort of put there as, if you don't keep up to date with what you're supposed to be doing, here's the penalty. So obviously you don't want the penalty, so you're going to keep up to date.
Okay, now let me move on to the fact that they borrow money and there's going to have to be some way to pay off these bonds. Brian, what are they talking about, or what are you hearing when it comes to a way to do that?
Well, they, you know, the people will, especially Democrats, will point out that these are not revenue bonds. These are not tied to a specific source of, you know, a specific tax, you know, a license plate fee or a gasoline we've seen in the past, things like that. This is general obligation bonds. So it just comes out of the, you know, it gets added to the pile of the things that the state has to use its full faith, credit, and taxing authority to make good on, which Controller Mendoza pointed out in my interview with her this week, Illinois always has done. We have never defaulted on payments to the bondholders, even when it is meant really hurting and delaying payments to vulnerable people who take care of vulnerable populations, things that Democrats in particular, but also Republicans, don't like delaying on, and schools. We've squeezed them so we could make these bond payments. The governor has talked about how we need revenue. The Democrats say, look, we passed a budget that had a $300 million surplus, a very small surplus. And, you know, with the way revenue and tax receipts fluctuate from year to year, I mean, that's almost a rounding error on the size of our state budget. But they do say we did have a surplus in there, so we had already, accounted for this. Nevertheless, the governor, in his announcement that he was doing this borrowing, said he's looking for other places to cut in state government, and that has Democrats worried. I talked to State Representative Greg Harris, who's one of the top House Democratic budget negotiators, and he said that he thinks the governor could well target human services again. These, as we've said a couple of times today, these are some of the groups that were most affected during the budget impasse. They weren't paid, yet the governor still entered into contracts with them for services. Well, this budget year, a lot of these programs have not gotten contracts apparently yet. So, you know, this is something that's going to be a developing situation. And I think Democrats are concerned that the governor may continue to try to find another way to continue pushing his economic and political agenda by using the budget. In his announcement, he also said he wants the legislature to come back this fall to work on the budget as well as his agenda.
And I would add, too, in terms of where's the money going to come from to pay off these bonds, where's the money going to come from to pay off the backlog of bills?
And at a higher interest
and
rate.
And at a higher interest rate.
Yeah. Less money we need to pay off these bonds.
The only logical reason for the governor's position, his earlier position, and it's a cynical one, is that if we sell the bonds, as somebody mentioned, we really do have to pay them off. We've never defaulted, or at least we haven't defaulted since the mid-1800s when we bought some back at less than face value.
So you're locked into a payment schedule.
Yeah, whereas with the vendors, we can keep stiffing them from now until, you know, the end of time.
I did want to move on here to something that got a lot of attention this week nationally, and it was a decision by the Trump administration to put a target end date on the DACA program, which helps the young undocumented immigrants who are here. Many of them are students and in other positions. Brian and Matt, Governor Rauner had a chance to weigh in on this week. What did he have to say about this?
Well, Governor Rauner initially didn't say anything, and he, if you're following Twitter, he kind of got called out a couple of times because it took him a while to make any kind of a response. And then when he did respond, he said, in essence, that this is not something that should be done on a state-by-state basis, and that the federal government is going to have to deal with the Dreamers, and the federal government needs to fix things. Now, I found the governor's, first of all, his delayed reaction, and then the reaction that he gave, a little bit curious, given that it was only a week ago that he was signing a pretty controversial immigration-related bill here in Illinois, in which the state local police agencies now, by state law, are not going to, in effect, they're not going to run errands for immigration agents. I was a little bit curious about why wouldn't the governor come out more strongly in favor of the Dreamers, and there are thousands of them here in Illinois. He's already gotten a lot of heat from the conservative side just for signing this bill last week. Once you've done that, you might as well keep it on, stay on that same type of message, and, say something more positive, be a little stronger in your support of the young people who are here and who are, are now very scared that they could be deported if the Trump plan goes through.
It's one of these issues where the governor, normally you talk about politicians are trying to define themselves on an issue. I think the governor has really worked to keep himself undefined on the immigration issue to the extent he can. He does not want to be seen, at least currently, as being too pro-immigrant or anti-immigrant. So he has this line. He says, well, it's Congress's job, and Congress should do comprehensive immigration reform. Well, what does that mean, Governor? And he won't say what the sort of thing. And if you actually think about the phrase he used, I think we heard this in the clip at the top of the show. These kids should not be kept in limbo, he says. But what he doesn't say, and for those of us who've had the benefit of Catholic education, what does that mean? Should they go to heaven or should they go to hell if you're not going to be kept in limbo? And he won't say that either. So this is some thing where he really wants to keep himself as undefined as possible. We certainly saw that in the Fox News interview a few weeks ago where the interviewer, Brett Beyer, really, I would say, appeared visibly frustrated trying to pin the governor down on immigration and kind of pitching him what, I think – normally for a Republican guest on Fox News would be a series of softball questions. But, the governor really feels like he's walking a tightrope between the, Trump voters in the Republican Party who are very energized by President Trump's often controversial anti-immigrant message. Remember he announced his campaign by saying, a lot of Mexicans who come here are rapists and things like that, and some of them are good people. He's walking that line. But this is also a blue state that Hillary Clinton won pretty handily. So he's got to try and split that difference. At least that's what he seems to be trying to do.
And Democrats have pounced on this issue, too, because the Chicago mayor, Rahm Emanuel's come out. He talked about the state needs what they call a Dreamer Bill of Rights. The attorney general is also joining a lawsuit. So Democrats are seeing this as a real opportunity as well.
Oh, sure. And this is another – the governor and Attorney General Lisa Madigan – are not exactly hand in hand on a lot of things. And I think this is another area where the governor wants to distance himself. But there is something to be said for governors can put a lot of pressure on a president, especially Republican governors.
And a number of them have spoken out against President Trump's action in essence, putting a 6-month timeline before the end of the protected status for children who were brought here without proper documentation, or people who were brought here without documentation as little kids. Although, didn't he also tweet then that not to worry, that if Congress doesn't act, they'll be taken care of? So you really can't tell what his
right.
message
he even is. Seemed to be walking back that very same by the end of the day. You know, he said this was an illegal action by the President Obama, but then he said at the end of the day, well, I'll revisit it if Congress doesn't act, but did not elaborate on what exactly that means.
Yeah, and one of the people who criticized it, you had mentioned your Catholic education, of which I am also a product, was the Archbishop of Chicago. And he came out in very strong terms.
As have some business leaders as well. So.
Oh, yeah, the Chamber of Commerce and others who basically say this is the wrong decision from the faith standpoint. This is against what Christianity teaches, according to Cupich, who's the Archbishop, and according to the Catholic Bishops' Conference. But from an economic viewpoint, the folks who came here as infants, grew up, know no other country than ours, and are very important in the jobs that they have, the professions they're following, they're not any different than like my kids or you guys' kids, except that the fact that they came here, they weren't born here.
Matt, you had an odd a story, I thought, this past week in which you were taking a look at a comment that Governor Rauner made regarding what he said were his immigrant grandparents. Fill us in on that.
Right. And actually, that's a good segue from our conversation about immigration, because the fact check that we did this week at the BGA in PolitiFact, Illinois, came from a comment that it became a fact check for us because Bruce Rauner had said it twice in very recently in the last few weeks in very high profile settings. And what he's said and what he has been saying ever since he was a candidate back in 2013 is that his grandparents were immigrants from Sweden. And he talks about his grandfather being his best friend. And if you look over the years when he's brought this up in public speeches, it's always changed a little bit. Sometimes it's his grandparents who didn't speak much English. His grandfather didn't speak much English. Sometimes it's that his grandparents were immigrants and they didn't speak English when they were young. It's become kind of a meme with Bruce Rauner, his immigrant grandparents, and it's what he uses it to tie himself to kind of the salt of the earth types. And it was a good counterbalance to his, you know, he's very, very wealthy, and it worked to sort of ground him during the campaign. What he said during the bill signing last week for the immigration bill regarding the local police activities in Illinois, he said that my grandparents were immigrants from Sweden. They came over in the late 1800s. This was a new twist on it. So we decided, we had heard this so many times before, that we would take a look at it. And also factoring into this was the fact that my editor at the Better Government Association, Bob Sector, had covered Bruce Rauner during the primary campaign and during the 2014 election when Bob was a reporter at the Chicago Tribune. And Bob recalled that they had had an interview with him in February of 2014 in which they had asked him about his immigrant grandparents. And Rauner explained in February 2014 to these reporters in, you know, very specifically, no, my great-grandparents came over from Sweden. My grandparents were born here, but they grew up with immigrant parents. So he knew, obviously, that it was not his grandparents, the ones who were the great influence on him. They were not immigrants. That was the origin of this fact check, and we rated it our lowest rating, which is pants on fire, which means there is not a shred of credibility to it. And, you know, at the bill signing up in Chicago, he brought it up. There were immigrant advocacy groups there, and he brings it up to sort of get credibility with the immigrant community. It's almost become a meme, and we just felt like it needed to be looked at a little closer.
Also, you can tell it's election season because we're seeing some stories come out and different things happening regarding candidates. Daniel Biss had an issue this week in which he decided to drop his just recently announced running mate. Brian, what happened with that?
Yeah, well, he had selected Chicago Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa to be his running mate. This is a pretty well-established liberal left alderman who is popular and a member of the sort of Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party. Remember, in the 2016 primary election here in Illinois, Bernie Sanders gave Hillary Clinton a run for her money, and he didn't win. She still won, but he performed better than a lot of people had expected. And so that's a significant voting block in Illinois, and Biss has been trying to make a play for those voters. So he selects this person, and then that was at the end of last week. By the middle of this week, apparently, to hear the state senator tell it, they had just come to a disagreement over this idea called BDS. This is boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And there's a movement that says that America and individual states and localities ought to boycott, divest, and move for sanctions against Israel over the conflict with Palestinians. And Ramirez Rosa, you know, says that, you know, Biss was aware of this. Biss says, well, I thought his support was not as strong. And so they had this back and forth. Rosa says, well, I do support BDS as part of a federal foreign policy, but not at the state and local level. At the end of the day, they go their separate ways, and Biss is now on the hunt for a new running mate. There have been several outlets reporting today as we go to air. Actually, as we're taping now, I've just gotten the notice that he has selected State Representative Leticia Wallace from Rockford. She's a Democrat, to be his running mate.
Well, Charlie, is this a big deal? Does this hurt Daniel Biss in this primary race? I mean, is it too early?
Probably for the general voter, it's too early. But for people in the Jewish community, they were very offended by the alderman's comments and the alderman's positions, and they're kind of scratching their heads. Why did Daniel Biss choose someone with this kind of a background? Now, obviously, from the political perspective, Biss was attempting to appeal to the Sanders voters, and it really, I think, it backfired, because to the extent that the Sanders voters are paying attention, they'd say, hey, you kicked our guy off the ticket, and, you know, there's going to be hard feelings there. But for the general public, yeah, even though it's the petition passing season has started, the filings won't be until after Thanksgiving, and the primary is next March. And I don't think people are here in September are focusing on the ballot box in March.
You know, and we should maybe be clear, I mean, about who Daniel Biss is. His mother was Israeli. His grandparents survived the Holocaust. His great-grandparents, he says, did not survive the Holocaust. So, I mean, you know, this is not somebody whose views on Jewish people or anything is in question.
Oh, no, not at all.
So, yeah, I mean, so it's that's what makes it an even more perhaps curious choice for those of us who are scratching our heads today about this. We should also add that there was a tremendous backlash on social media. Now, it's always worth remembering, as Charlie kind of pointed out, these are people who are very engaged in the political process, not the average voter. But, you know, these are people who also could be potential door knockers or donors for a candidate and help generate the buzz for that Biss is frankly counting on, because he doesn't have the billions of dollars that Pritzker has to put into television advertising, although he has raised a lot of money. But he's just not, you know, he just doesn't have that kind of wealth. So, I mean, he is kind of counting on becoming the insurgent candidate, and he alienated a significant part of the insurgent left on social media by backing away from Alderman Ramirez Rosa and dumping him from the ticket. He certainly has a lot of time to try to rehabilitate himself with Representative Leticia Wallace as his new running mate.
And before time gets away, another story this week, you mentioned the Holocaust. The state of Illinois has a Holocaust museum, and a story came up from the Chicago Tribune regarding what the guy many view as the Democratic frontrunner, at least at this moment, for governor, and that's J.B. Pritzker, that he had donated money to Rod Blagojevich. He also was on the board of the Holocaust Museum, and soon after his big donation to Blagojevich, a big grant comes into the museum, and that's a story that I have a feeling we will see more of as the campaign goes on, but I'll get your guys' thoughts. Anything on that?
I'd say that J.B. Pritzker is going to be fighting any Blagojevich connections throughout the primary and probably and if he becomes a candidate, that will dog him throughout the general election. There's just going to be no escaping it, right? Or, you know, no matter how accurate or inaccurate the charges are, you know, you've seen what the Republicans did. They were pretty effective in the 2016 elections in linking Democratic incumbents to Mike Madigan. And I think you're going to see a really strong effort to link Pritzker to Blagojevich. You've got this. But earlier you have even more damaging, as the Tribune story had a story about wiretap tapes in which Pritzker was discussing positions or appointments with Blagojevich. And, you know, he comports himself fairly well in the recordings, but he's still right on the phone. And that's going to be something that he will just have to deal with. It's not going to go away.
It's time now for our notes from the field. And Brian, let's start with you.
Yeah, we had yet another departure announcement from the Illinois legislature. State Representative Brandon Phelps, he's in the 118th district. He's from Harrisburg, down in far southern Illinois. As people like to point out, that's geographically closer to Mississippi than it is to Chicago. He says that the reason he's leaving is he has had an eye problem since an accident several years ago has affected his eyesight. There was some actual physical trauma to his eye, and says that he's just resigning his seat. He's already appointed to the seat Natalie Phelps Finney. If that name sounds familiar, it's because she's Brandon's cousin, and as well as the daughter of former Congressman David Phelps from Southern Illinois. I can't help but notice, though, also Representative Phelps is a Democrat. President Trump won his district 67-29. And his neighboring Representative John Bradley, as well as his state Senator Gary Forby, both Democrats, were also unseated in very nasty campaigns last year. And he had a big target on his back. The Republicans were coming after him.
Charlie?
A union representing state health care workers is suing the governor for not giving them pay raises that were provided for as part of the budget that was approved. We talk about the budget and we think about the dollars, but in reality, there's more to it than just allocating dollars to be spent for different purposes. Every year, there's also what's called a budget implementation bill that makes changes in the statutes to reflect the places where the dollars are supposed to go. And in this particular year's bill, and it was like almost 800 pages long, it's laid out specifically that there would be rate increases for various providers, including the community care program, folks who work with people with developmental disabilities, and the home service program, which was 48 cents increase in the wage. And the governors refused to pay those raises, and that's led to the lawsuit. Now, the governor's position is that, well, this should be a subject to collective bargaining, and therefore, until we have a contract, those pay increases are on hold.
And Matt?
Well, Governor Rauner is about to embark on his first overseas trade mission. He's going to Asia, and I'm curious whether the governor is going to be touting the Illinois of which he speaks, that it has a terrible business climate because of its overregulation and its corrupt Chicago machine politics, or is he going to be touting the version of Illinois that has the hardest working people in America? Let's hope it's the latter.
That will do it for this week. Members of the broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Matt Dietrich. And you can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.